it's nice to see all of you here this morning. Divine science is not your ordinary, traditional, and conventional religious teaching. It is different than most. And as a result, it does not always appeal to everyone. Prayer is a good example. Almost every Sunday, we are reminded that prayer in divine science is not for the purpose of trying to make something happen. Prayer, the focus of prayer in divine science is not out here in the world, not a matter of trying to get anything from God. Rather, in divine science, prayer is a practice through which an individual can establish union and communion with God. It is a matter of wanting nothing from God, but that He be revealed in each one of us. That's what divine science is all about. And incidental to that revelation, this Spirit of God that is revealing itself within each one of us literally goes forth out into the world as the health in a body, or as the peace in someone's mind, or as harmony in someone's home. As a result of this realization, it becomes more obvious that it is on earth as it is in heaven. In other words, prayer in divine science is the way through which an individual can find himself in that very specific realm of life that Jesus referred to as the kingdom of heaven. Because this kingdom is not a place, but an awareness. It is an activity that takes place only in consciousness. It is our own realization of a peace that goes far beyond human understanding, and of a love that goes far beyond what we usually refer to as human affection. The bottom line is this: the kingdom is not a human experience, but a spiritual reality. And in this reality, this most holy and sacred place, all who enter find themselves in peace and in love and in harmony. And so it is that Jesus said, seek first this kingdom of heaven, this realization, and whatever the need, it is met. This morning we have an opportunity to attain a deeper understanding of this truth. So let us at this moment share the statement of being that you will find on page 2 of your Sunday program. After the statement, we will have a moment of silence for personal contemplation and meditation. God is all, both invisible and visible. One presence, one mind, one power is all. This one that is all is perfect life, perfect love, and perfect substance. Man is the individualized expression of God and is ever one with this perfect life, perfect love, and perfect substance. At this moment, I'd like to have our ushers come forward for the offertory. Jesus said, the Lord our God is one Lord. tells us, God is one. And of course, our divine science statement of being, which we just recited, speaks of the one mind, the one power, and about the one substance. And there are times when it is difficult for some individuals to grasp this idea of the oneness of all life. For example, a recently married man brings his new bride a flower. And a sense of love comes out from within this young lady. And at the very same time, in a different city, a man brings a mink coat to his wife of 30 years. And she too experiences a welling up of love from within her. And at the very same time, in another city, in a hospital room, a mother is holding her first newborn child. And she too feels a sense of love. Now, the ladies did not experience different loves. There is but one love. In the very same way that there is but one air that we all breathe, and there is but one water which we all drink, this is the oneness of all life. That love was not in the flower, nor in the mink coat, nor in the newborn child. That love is within each man, woman, and child that comes into the world. We bring this love with us, equally, in all of us, but felt and experienced according to individual consciousness, personalized by our own capacity to love. Think of that flower. There is no love in the flower. The flower is just the flower, period. It is you and I that bring beauty to the flower in direct proportion as beauty is in us. And if it's not within us, you'll never see it out here in the world. In the very same way, life reveals itself in us in direct proportion as we are willing to accept it. The peace we all seek, and that love which we all long for, and the health which we want, health of the body or in our relationships or in our wallets, whatever it is that we feel that is missing in our lives, it's never out here. It's within us. We just mentioned three appearances that brought about a sense of love. Flowers, a coat, a baby. But let me ask you, instead of flowers and coats and babies, let's think of those appearances that we call personalities and situations and conditions. Why should we consider them? Let me tell you, there's a story in the book of Genesis, and I'm quite sure many of us are familiar with it. We are told that God brought every animal in the world before Adam. And he told Adam to give each of these animals a name. And he did. But it doesn't mean that he called lions lions and dogs dogs or pigs pigs. Metaphysically, a name simply means the nature of a thing. He gave them qualities. He called this good and he called that bad. He called this pleasant, pleasing, and he called that unpleasant. Are you aware that we do that every day of our lives? We give everything in life a name, a quality. And not unlike Adam, we give everything a name. Now, There is something that we should all understand, and the sooner we understand it, the better off all of us are going to be. And that is that it is the mind that determines whether we live in heaven or in hell. It is in mind that we determine whether life is good or bad, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. Isn't it written? Thinking makes it so. Let's not forget that beauty, or any other quality of life, lies in the eye of the beholder. Now, our Bible tells us that we are the sons and daughters of God, that God indwells each one of us. What did Paul say? Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? I think that, those two statements are so simple and to the point and so clear. And yet it is so unfortunate that we have yet to accept that the Spirit of God dwelleth in us. Because the minute we begin to accept this truth, we will realize that the point of contact with God is within each one of us. What this means is that we carry with us the answer to every human need. At all times we have access to God, to all of His wisdom and to all of His power and to all of His abundance. Everything that is in God is right where we are. All that God is within you. Not just part of Him, but the fullness of God. Isn't it written? I will put my Spirit in you, and you shall live. That's what's living us now. It's not the fact that your heart is beating and your lungs are pumping. So how is it that we can make contact with this indwelling presence? Be still, we are told. Just be still. And to the degree that we are willing to do this, you and I will discover the very same thing that Jesus discovered. That you are beginning to overcome your world. No longer subject to personality or condition or situation. But as the poet wrote, master of my fate and captain of my soul. Now, it is so sad, and I do honestly believe this, that it is so sad that in spite of having been given instruction and direction on how to overcome the world, we still find ourselves subject to it. For thousands of generations, we have looked to idols and to graven images and to the mountains and to the skies and even to books and crystals and personalities for answers. And all the while, I in the midst of thee am mighty to heal. I do believe that every now and then we should remind ourselves that there are principles in life, laws that follow certain patterns. The principle of mathematics is just one example. 2 + 2 is always 4. This never changes. Whether we're in Texas or DC or up in space somewhere. In the very same way, the principle on which music is based is another good example. No one is going to argue that the principle of music is going to bless someone because they go to church every Sunday and not another one. No one is going to argue that this principle of music is going to withhold itself from anyone because of their age, or the color of their skin, or their religion. No musician is going to accept this. No musician is dumb enough to get on his knees and beg and pray and plead that it do to him or for him what he has done to hundreds of successful other ones. Principles are totally impersonal. But the more an individual gives of himself to his music, of his time, of his attention, of his heart and mind and effort, the more this individual practices his music, the more he begins to establish a very personal rapport with this principle. And the more he begins to identify with it, the more this individual establishes a oneness with this principle. And pretty soon it's going to be very difficult to separate the individual from his music. Think of Louis Armstrong. Think of Pavarotti. Think of Frank Sinatra. Each one of these individuals became one with their music. Same thing happened to the man Jesus. He said, "If you see me, you see the Father which sent me." One. In the same way, no musician is ever going to argue with the principle because he cannot sing the right notes or play the right chords. This inability to do this simply means that the musician is not cooperating with the principle. You can't argue with principles. You either cooperate with it or you don't. In physics, there is such a thing as action and reaction. And unless you are aware of this principle, you can get into a lot of trouble. And in the very same way, there is a principle back of this life. And we either cooperate with it or we don't. And if we do not, we pay the consequences. In metaphysics, we say, as in mind, so in manifestation. And if we do not cooperate with this metaphysical principle, you and I are going to pay the price. We do not pray to this principle that it stop the unpleasant things in life. It is we as individuals who simply stop focusing on what is wrong. Let's go back to the musician. That's what he does. A musician doesn't do a thing with the wrong notes that he is playing. The principle of music is not going to stop him from playing the wrong notes. It is the individual himself that needs to stop doing it. And that's where the practice comes in. It is the individual himself or herself who chooses to practice only the right notes. Because without that practice, nothing is going to change. And for all of us who at one time or another made the attempt to learn how to play an instrument, you all know what I'm talking about. Athletes practice every day. Dancers practice every day. The good ones do. Runners run every day. Painters paint every day. Writers write every day. As a matter of fact, I think it was the pianist Paderewski who once said, "If I do not practice one day, I can tell the difference. But if I fail to practice 2 days in a row, my audience can tell the difference." We as individuals, and it doesn't matter what we do, how old we are, what our careers have been, we as individuals can change our lives for the better. When we stop talking, not only to one another, but to God, about what is wrong with our lives. Because we are the ones who dissolve the unpleasant things in our lives when we stop giving them our attention. And by that, I mean our time and our thoughts and our emotions. A musician on stage playing a solo. He plays a wrong note. There is no way that that individual is going to get the note, put it back in the horn, and play it right. That note is gone. It's over. Done with. He moves on. Which is why I'm saying that no musician is going to waste his time focusing on the wrong notes. They are going to focus on playing the right notes. That's why they practice. That individual, whether a man or a woman, who continues to whine and complain and gripe about what is wrong in their lives, will continue to wallow in their own misery until they discover that they are dealing with a law that we in divine science refer to as within, so without. And all the while, as we've been reminding ourselves for the past several lessons, the answer to a better life lies in the midst of us. And that answer has a name. The Lord God Almighty. You can call it George. You can call it Helen. The name does not matter. But the promise has been given to us all. This Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. This Lord leadeth me unto still waters. He restoreth my soul. And though I may find myself walking through that valley of the shadow of death, or the valley of fear, of guilt, of shame, that valley of loneliness, of hurt and frustration, I will fear no evil. For this Lord is ever with me. And his rod and his staff will comfort me. These are not empty promises, but promises that can be proven over and over and over again. At a very basic level, what do these promises mean? It means that if you lost your health, you can regain it. And if you lost your job, you know the old saying, when one door closes, another window opens. And if your home is falling apart, you will find another one. I'm talking about relationships. Perhaps your relationships are in a state of chaos, disarray. If no one is talking to you, except to complain about what you have done or failed to do, you can turn everything around. By becoming the very temple where the Spirit of God reveals itself as an answer, as your peace of mind, as your health in the body, as that harmony in your home, wherever you may find yourself. Whatever the hurt, it is taken away. And whatever the fear, it's just not there anymore. And whatever the loss, it is regained or restored. Now, This is a promise. As a matter of fact, it has been proven over and over and over again. Where the Spirit of God is, as an awareness. Where the Spirit of God is, as a conscious realization in the midst of you. There is freedom. You are free. And there is peace. And there is wisdom and understanding. And there is supply. And an abundance of it. A number of years ago, as a matter of fact, from this very pulpit, a divine science minister once reminded us that the world is crying out for love. But, he said, ask yourselves, how many truly loving people do you know? In your own environment, in your home, in your workplace, in your neighborhood, how many truly loving people do you know? How many do you know that accept you right as you are? Without judgment, without pointing out all of your faults, without bringing to your attention all of the things that are not right in your life. The world is filled with people who have not measured up to the best that is in them. The world is filled with people who have failed at one thing or another, and then they hold these failures over their heads for the rest of their lives. There are people who have failed at 2 or 3 or 4 different things. And people call them failures. At a very personal level, you have no idea. You really don't. How many times I have fallen flat on my face. Are you aware that Abraham Lincoln failed 6 times before he was elected president? No one would call him a failure. Thomas Edison failed thousands of times before he discovered that light bulb. Would you consider him a failure? Many of us are, I guess, dare say all of us are familiar with Kentucky Fried Chicken. Do you know that that so-called Colonel Sanders failed at almost everything he ever tried? Until he discovered the right ingredients for his chicken? Is he a failure? In 1965, an undergraduate at Yale University wrote a term paper about the challenges that a beginning company faces. He turned in his term paper. The professor did not think much of it. And he gave him a C. Average. A couple of years later, that individual, that student, a man now, by the name of Frederick W. Smith, he took his term paper and applied it to a business that he was just starting. That's why we have Federal Express today. FedEx. The results of a term paper that got a C. I dare say that none of us would ever refer to these individuals as failures. The question is, if you fail at whatever, should you try again? There was a clergyman by the name of Cliver, Granville Cliver, who wrote that successful people are usually the ones who use failure as a stepping stone to a better life. Out there in the world, living as ordinary human beings, there are 2 laws by which most people live. The first one is this: if at first you don't succeed, try and try again. But I dare say that most people live by the second law, which is, if at first you don't succeed, the hell with it. And they move on to something else. But let me share a secret with you. Man is never a failure. Man cannot fail. Failure is not within the nature of man. What happens is that he usually gives up trying. And even when he gives up trying, he's not a failure. There's nothing wrong in failing. The sin is not in trying again. I say to you this morning that it doesn't matter what has happened in your life. And it doesn't matter what is happening right now in your life. And I say that it doesn't matter because there is a delete button in each one of us. The Bible calls this delete button the Lord God in the midst of you. And this button is saying, behold, I make all things new. And the former shall be taken away. We are not here to carry a cross with a smile on our face. There is no virtue in becoming a martyr. We are here to dismiss anything and everything that is contrary to a full and complete life. And we do this, and this is what divine science is all about. We do this by practicing the presence of God right where we are. And as a result of this presence, we ourselves are transformed into an embodiment of love. Not by being right, but by being loving and caring and understanding. We ourselves literally become the embodiment of strength, not by telling others what to do, but by maintaining peace in our minds and charge over our emotions. And as a result of this practice of abiding in the presence, someone is going to catch a glimpse of what we are projecting out here in the world without our even opening our mouths. And without meaning to, we become the harmony in our workplace. We literally become the peace of our homes and the love in our relationships. Not by what we say or what we do, but by the spirit that is beginning to reveal itself as an activity of our own consciousness. We literally become transformed by the spirit. My friends, I really do not have the words to stress this enough. But there is a spirit in you and in me, what Paul called the Christ in you. And again, as a result of our practice, we slowly and gently become aware of this spirit. And it is for this one reason alone that you and I are here. That we may bear witness to the spirit of love, to the spirit of peace, and to the spirit of wisdom and power. Not only in our homes and within our friends, but to all whom we find in our presence. And if you've taken any of our classes in divine science, you're going to discover why it is that our teaching can be stated, defined, described by a single sentence. The whole of divine science is the practice of the omnipresence of God. I will encourage you, a I'm going to say to you this morning that long before we open our mouths to voice an opinion that is based on frustration or anger or fear, with all due forgiveness, bite your tongue and remind yourself of the temple of God that is in the midst of you. So don't desecrate that temple by thinking negative, by emotionalizing negatives, by dwelling on negatives. For it is forever saying, be not afraid. I am the Lord God that healeth thee of all thine diseases. Evaluate your experiences. Evaluate the past 10, 20, 30, 40 years of your life. So you've made a mess of your life. So what? Though you're making right now your life a living hell. So what? Though you find yourself in the valley of lack and limitation. I am with you always. Please let me remind you once again that nothing we do can ever separate us from the presence of God. For I fill heaven and earth, even now as we sit here. The Spirit of God is living you. And it is in these quiet moments, in the deep silence at the center of our being, that we feel a voice saying, you are my beloved child, in whom I am well pleased. I will heal. I will restore. I will bless. So we make this lesson practical. Will you join me for a few moments of quietness, stillness? A few moments so that we can abide in this silence where the answer to every human need is revealed. Let us be still. Yes, God, you are here with all of your love and all of your wisdom and all of your power. With the blessing of your presence here and now. I give you thanks. And so it is that the Spirit of God that abides in the midst of each one of us is blessing us and keeping us. It shines His love upon us and is gracious unto us. For it lifts our consciousness and gives us peace.